It's great to be an artist, but when an artist turns to social reform, reaching out to young people, reaching out and transforming their lives, you get a completely exciting new picture. We'll discuss all that today with a very special artist. The known queen of slums, as you are called, and you have a book that refers to you as the slum queen. How does your life start from Kashmir, where you were born, and how does it take you to all the slums of the world, as it were, and of the country, transforming lives?
Anyone who knows me, even 5%, they know that I love children. You know, my dad dropped me to school, being an army officer. I would see a lot of kids playing on the roadside, and I would be very curious and also somewhere sad, being a child myself, that why are these children not in school? And I would often ask my father, I said, if you're dropping me to school, why isn't their father or their mother dropping them to school? And he would be like, you know, you're too young for it. It's okay, we'll speak about this later. So I guess being born in an army family, where you are born in Jammu and Kashmir, which is my home, and brought up all over the country. I guess this is where the whole, the whole journey of my life started, where I've always had a lot of love, a lot of, focus on education. And every 2 years, my dad would be posted to a new city, to a new state, to a new village, town. And school changes, your friends change. And that kind of helped me learn so much because, you know, India is such a versatile country. So it is so much to learn. I would say one part of my life is Jammu and Kashmir, and then it's West Bengal when my dad got posted to Shantiniketan. So I have the work inspiration of my life from West Bengal Shantiniketan, where my art journey started from. And I think social work that I love people, I love children, I love to see women stand on their feet because I'm a woman myself, came also from my mother being a very strong officer's wife who would go into meeting all the bhaiyajis, we call them, jawans, army right, soldiers, their wives when there is trouble on the border, you know. So I guess this was kind of a balance of my life, learning from both sides.
Now, one critical, crucial thing, because we have a captive audience of Russians, you're called Ruble. Who gave you that name, Ruble? And what's the perspective with that name?
Ruble, my name meaning is light. So my father was on the border when I was born. I was born in a very small village called Devli in Jammu and Kashmir. And my mom couldn't even reach the hospital because I had to be delivered at home in my grandparents' house. And he came after, I think, day and a half. And he tells me, he said, when I held you for the first time, I just said, this is my Ruble. Because I don't know, I joke with him. I said, I don't know what light you saw in me at that time. But he said, because he reads a lot. And that was the word he found in one of the Arabic book that he was reading. And then it connected to rubble somewhere with the Russian connection. In fact, once I was in Spain and in a store, and a lady who was showing me some stuff, she says, where are you from? I said, I'm from India. I said, you? She said, Russia. I said, nice to meet you. I'm so-and-so. I said, I'm Ruble. So she looked at me and she smiled. She said, oh, wow. I've been through this before.
We are well personified. You moved all over the country. Obviously, your father was being posted. But somewhere, your relationship with Jammu Kashmir, of course, survives in a wonderful way. You're wearing something which has a motif of Jammu Kashmir, yes. Right? So tell us, what is the connection that remains intact to this day? And where do you see that as being the beginning of your life with friends and young people elsewhere in the world?
See, well, I always say Jammu and Kashmir is my Janmabhoomi. And Mumbai, Maharashtra is my karma bhumi. It means that's where I was born. And this is where my work started when I came to Mumbai when I was 19 years old and started working from there. And if you say Jammu and Kashmir, last week I was in Kashmir and I was literally the last border area, LOC. I was on LOC. We started a computer center there. We are we have a lot of intervention in schools. We have skill centers running in the madrasas there. We have computer labs running in the schools. Because I feel that kids living on the border area should not be left behind. And you spoke about the sari. Well, this is hand-woven by one of our Kashmir girls.
Oh, wow.
And which I'm so proud of. And I always say that we're working across India, but my Kashmir girls make me so proud. And, you know, I must quote my main girl, Nigat, who has been with us for many years today. I still remember her one dialogue. When she met me a couple of years back, almost 8-9 years back, and the thing that made us start to work, she said, "Ma'am, you give me one chance. I do not want to be a burden on my father." She said it in Hindi, of course.
Of course,
Boj on my Abba. "I want to earn, stand on my own feet, and then get married, and then also look after my entire family." And if you meet her today, if you see her today, she is just an amazing woman. You know, I've seen her from much younger. In the last 8-9 years, she's grown up as a woman. She's getting married end of the year. And I'm so proud of her because she has, one girl, has in less than 6 month initial days, she connected us to 350 girls. I have not one example. I have hundreds of examples of girls pan India who have done that. And I've seen the resilience, the hard work, the strength they have inside. Only thing they need is the platform. And this is what my Kashmir girls have done. And I'm so proud of them. And, you know, it just makes me feel like I've got the biggest prize, biggest award in the world when I see them earning, standing on their feet and walking with their head absolutely held high.
Terrific. Now you speak of an award. And you've just got a remarkable award, and that's the $1 million award of the Global Teacher Prize in Dubai. Please tell us about it. It's not every day that a teacher is recognized in such a remarkable manner. Please tell us about that.
The best thing was when an educator, when a teacher is recognized on such a huge global international platform, that itself is commendable. It was at the World Government Summit. First 3 days, like, we land in Dubai and there are first 50 educators and teachers who are there. And then we have school visits, all of us together. We go for school visits and we go for together into sessions and AI labs and, you know, everything was planned. And final day when the prize was supposed to be announced was at the World Government Summit. And we're sitting holding hands. And then, of course, you know, your name is announced. You go there, you get the prize. It's a very surreal feeling because, I mean, literally huge is a small word. It's such a huge stage that you walk and so many people sitting in front. And then you see your national flag right there in this humongous stage. You feel, and, you know, being a Fauji kid, we've been taught to salute the flag.
Obviously.
Indian flag from our childhood. So when you see that, you know, you that feeling is something you can't express. You know, when I saw that large hoarding of Indian flag with my face on it, it never was Rubal Nagi's prize. It was India Bharat's prize.
But let's just put it in perspective at home. We celebrate Teacher's Day. That's the 5th of September.
Yes.
The birthday of our late president, Sarvepalli Radhakrishnan. And that's a great moment. I mean, it's celebrated with great aplomb and so on and so forth. But do you think we are not doing enough for teachers? Do you think we think of them as a noble profession? We talk about them, but are we doing enough? What is that's missing in the life of a teacher that we need to look at nationally?
You know, well, if you talk about celebrating Teachers' Day every year, yes, we celebrate on our Instagram post. We celebrate on social media. We celebrate by giving flowers to teachers, by putting a post that how a teacher shaped our life when we were students. Mm. But when it comes to celebrating them in real life, honestly, I feel there is this link which is missing. You know, we work with many schools today across India. We have interventions in many schools. One thing that is common is that they have been given so many other duties other than just teaching. They're like, ma'am, we have been given so many other duties that we barely sometimes have time to teach in schools. So I asked them, I said, then somebody will say that you are not hardworking enough. They said, ma'am, if you just give us 80% of teaching job and only 20% of other thing, we will show you results. Then you tell us and then we are at fault. But we have not been given that opportunity. So I feel the most important thing is not just about celebrating teachers, but making changes in schools, in your policies, that where we can train our teacher better, where we can give them more time to connect with their students. This is the profession which is not just shaping a child's life, but this is a profession which is shaping the life, the future of a nation. So we need to celebrate Teachers Day by honoring our teachers, by not just telling them what to do, but also getting them involved into policy making, getting them involved into giving their suggestions. Viewpoint is very important. I think now every school should start a monthly or quarterly session with teachers where they come up and give their suggestions about how they can better education in their school. What are the things, if these small things can be added, would attract kids to come to school happy and learn happily. See, most important thing is that kids should come to school happy to learn.
That's important. That's really important.
It should not be a burden that, oh my God, I have to get up in the morning and go to school. No, I have to go to school. I'm looking forward to going to school. Like I used to look forward to going to school.
Right.
Today, I don't see kids having that feeling in them.
Now, you now have a major problem, and that's the digital problem. We are concerned about children being distracted by the internet. Distracted by various digital platforms and programs. And the poor teacher who you've already said has so many burdens to suffer, what does that poor teacher do to get the child's attention back?
Well, I don't see AI or technology as a negative element in the society because it's a tool which opens you to the larger section of learning, like AI when you are using it to learn faster. It is also helping the teachers. But if you're only going to use AI and not use your own mind, your own brain, and just cut, copy, paste, then of course it's a serious issue. AI and technology, hand in hand with humanity, is very important because in a world which is growing with AI and technology, you need to have that human touch. You need to have that empathy, that humanity, that humility in you where you are connected. Because the end of the day, AI can teach you ABC. But a child, when the child cries, it's your teacher who's going to give you a hug and say, don't cry, I'm here for you. I will give you extra classes if you've got less grades in this term. And I'm here to help you. Why are you losing heart? When the child is not eaten his tiffin or her tiffin, it's the teacher who's going to do the mother's job and say, finish your lunch. It is very important. If you put AI, I'm feeling low today, say, okay, I'm giving you the tips, what you should do, tuck, for feeling happy.
Go and see your teacher.
Yeah, go and see your teacher. But that does not make you happy, right?
Right.
It's the human connection, which hand in glove, if it moves forward with AI and technology, I think sky is the limit.
On another level, shall we get back to how you broke into the atmosphere of slums? How did you deal with that? I mean, surely there must have been some resistance. There must have been some ambiguity of how do we respond? How do we react? How do parents of the children that you would have reached out to in the slums, etc., how do those parents react, etc.? And what have you been able to build up?
Well, for first 2 years, two and a half years, it took me to do parent counseling because I still remember that one couple where I said, "Ki, I want to know if your children are going to school." And they just looked at me and they said, "Why do they need to go to school?" Mm. And I was like hit by a stone. I was like, "You are not saying whether they go to school or not. You're saying, why do they need to go to school?" They said, "Yes, ma'am, we have a lot of other things to do in life. There are a lot of other problems." So to change that mindset took me a couple of years because firstly, it was important to make them understand the importance of...
Where was this that you...
In Maharashtra, Mumbai.
In Maharashtra,
I started from Mumbai.
Okay.
And it was important to make them understand the importance of education. you know, I had to take that why out. That why they need to go to school, why they need to be educated. I said, they have to go to school. They have to be educated.
This is a part of your Misal India.
Yes, this is Misal India. This is Rubal Nagi Art Foundation. This is part of Rubal Nagi. I mean, it started with Rubal Nagi as one teacher and then, of course, grew into a lot of other initiatives.
And why the name Misal?
Misal means an example.
Right.
So we wanted to set an example that how slums can be transformed, how the mindset of people can change with creativity, with art, with sitting with them, just holding their hand and listening to them and telling them, listen, no matter what the problem is, we will solve it together. We are one family.
So frankly, if your name wasn't Rubal, your name would be Misal.
My name would actually be Misal. Yeah, that's a good one.
I saw in your CV that you entered the State School of Fine Arts in London. That's perhaps one of the most enviable places to go to. And you would have had huge opportunities to stay on and carry along that path in Europe or in London or whatever. But you chose to come back to India. And what you chose was to use what you had learned about art or perfected about art to deal with transforming people's lives, which really is what matters really for us in interviewing you here today. So please tell us something about that.
Even if I was getting millions and billions of dollars and pounds there, I would still choose to come back to my country. And, you know, for me, it was all about coming back and serving my country. And even when I was doing art, I knew, you know, from when I was 13, 14, younger age, that I'm not just going to be an artist. Because for me, just painting or creating sculpture was so not something which made me 100% happy. What made me 100% happy was when I was surrounded by children.
Right.
When I was sitting with women and talking about, can we do something to start, you know, making money for you guys and maybe a new startup or, you know, working from home, baking from home, stitching from home, weaving from home, what we can do, which will give you income without you guys going out and you know, not getting an opportunity or your people at home will not allow. So I think that was always something that fascinated me the most. And I mean, it's not that if I was living abroad, I couldn't be surrounded by kids, but I just wanted to be back home. Like when I started, I didn't start with, you know, how many are your kids in school or not? Are you working? Women are working or not? They would shut the door on my face. They say, ma'am, please, we have every second person coming in. I started with creativity. I picked up my colors. I picked up my 4 or 5 team members and I just walked into a slum. I said, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to ask anything. Whatever you're doing, do. Should I color your walls? So I started coloring. And initially when I colored, a lot of people came out of curiosity and they said, ma'am, what's happening? Is there a film shooting happening or making some colorful set? Or our homes are going to break because you're marking the walls? Or is it a political campaign? Somebody's doing something for us.
Right.
I said, wait and watch. None of these three are applicable here. I said, I just want you to feel happy and joyful. Even if you're living in a slum, you see these beautiful, colorful walls. And I think within a week, the whole community was out coming and suggesting, ma'am, can we have this color here? My daughter's getting married in 2 months. Can we have this color here? So it became like family for me. And once that happened, then I sat with them. Then we spoke about cleanliness. Then we spoke about toilet use. We spoke about less use of plastic. We spoke about why word of children going to school and getting educated was important.
Now tell me, this is a lot to do with these very disadvantaged kids who don't have very important, not very rich schools, etc. And they're trying to do the best and you come and inspire them to do even better. But try and contrast them with the well-off schools, people who are well-off in life and they have access to schools that are expensive. And there are some very expensive schools in this country now. What is the reaction of children in those schools to this kind of inspiration? I can see the inspiration that impacts the lives of these children who are going to not such expensive schools, etc., or maybe government schools, etc., where you pay very little or you don't pay at all, with contrasted with those who go to these very expensive schools.
You know, I still remember one art workshop that I did on Carter Road. And we had 350, 400 children from our different slums. And I had called 20, 30 of my friends, their kids. And some of the Bollywood children were there, some of the corporate family, their children were there. And they were all together sitting on the floor painting. And my students sitting with a celebrity kid, I mean, just to explain it to you, a celebrity kid is looking like this, literally, you know, like, oh, I've seen him. And his and the father comes to drop, and father is a Bollywood star. And they're sitting together and painting. They're talking to each other. They're eating in the same plate. Now, what is the lesson in this for the kids who are from wealthy families? Well, they have never sat on a floor and painted like this, especially sitting with a child who lives in a slum. So for them, it's a learning thing that this is so nice. Like, you know, their kids have spoken to me later and they're like, ma'am, we felt so nice, teacher. You know, it was such a grounding thing. Can we do it again? So I was like, great. Now for my kids in the slums, for them, it was like, wow, you know, I was sitting next to so-and-so person and painting.
Right.
I felt important. I felt seen. I felt heard. And it was really nice. And they are also nice to us. So the mindset, the inspiration, the motivation kind of sets you on a different path altogether. The point is equality. I feel that this gap, of course, is there. Parents are today struggling to pay school fees, but they want their kids in private schools. Why? Because, ma'am, we want our kids to learn English. I'll give you an example of my house help. She has a four-year-old child. She lives in the area we live in. And once she came with the child, I said, get him, let him sit. I gave him chocolate. I said, he goes to school. He looks young. She says, yes, ma'am. Private school name. So I looked at her. I said, but why there is a BMC school right across here in front of the house? She said, no, ma'am, the education is not very good. I said, for a four-year-old child, you think he needs two PhD? Education is not good. How do you know? I said, do you know we are sending an English teacher in the school? She looked at me. She said, really, ma'am? I said, do you know we have started a computer lab there? No, ma'am, I didn't know. I said, that's the problem. You people are not even going and exploring that option. At least before you reject a government school, first go and see it. So then she went, and now she's moved her child from that private school to government school.
To a government school.
To the government school. And she comes and thanks me every morning. She says, you know, ma'am, you have no idea that this one advice of yours, which I didn't know about, has reduced 80% of our financial stress.
Let me just touch on some tough areas in education. One is this overwhelming desire that parents have for their children to perform enormously well because they need to get into institutions of undergraduate level and postgraduate level, etc. And so you have this whole business of tutoring children specially for examinations, NEET examination, getting into medical colleges, getting into engineering colleges, IIT, etc. And we've heard some very sad stories about children committing suicide because they think they can't make the grade that their parents expect them. Now, this is a national problem. What do we do about this?
Well, I think firstly, communication is where we lack with our children today, be it a parent, be it teacher, be it even your friends. Because if a child has gone to a level of thinking in his or her mind that I want to kill myself, I want to commit suicide, itself is something we have failed, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How has the child reached that level? Parents have failed, teachers have failed, friends have failed. So the child to go to that extreme, is it only about exam? Is it only about not getting good grades, or is it more than that? Grades are important, but are they so important that you're going to push your children to go into something which nobody would want? So how are you balancing that? You know, let's talk about music. Let's talk about going out and having a cup of coffee with friends and your parents. When you go out, I mean, nowadays, if you go out, you see on a table of four or five, all of them are on phones. Yes. When are you having a conversation? It's so important that two humans have a conversation. And only when you converse with your child will tell you what he or she is feeling.
Right.
And what help they need from their parent, from their teacher, to help them become a better person, to go get good grades, and to excel in whatever they want to do.
It's such a range of things that you've talked about. But when you look at things like Netflix shows and K-pop, BTS, Korea, etc., creating a soft power for their respective societies and just their respective countries. What is it that we need to do to create that soft power impact across the globe?
I mean, if you watch those shows, what are they trying to portray to the world? And today, media, social media, online, whatever you put goes to not just India, but goes globally. I mean, you're seen, you're heard, you're viewed in every part of the world. That's the power of social media today.
Sure.
So when you put content which show good about your country, your culture, then people are going to learn that. People are going to see that. And that is the perspective they're going to have. That is the mind they are going to create about your country. So our country is so rich in everything. Why can't we use our social media platforms, our Bollywood, our OTT platforms to bring that forward? Why can't we show the best of our country to the world? Why do we only want to show the slums and dirty slums, how miserable women are? Why are we only showing this? I mean, today, look at Indian women. Where are they not sitting?
Absolutely.
What have they not achieved?
Absolutely.
Why are we not celebrating that? Why are we still trying to show them that, oh my God, they are in such miserable condition? Well, across the globe, women in the world probably are going through their good and bad time. Why only Indian women?
In the end, if I was to ask you, for all the children whose life you've impacted, and all those children who are still to come in touch with you, perhaps one day they will, if you have a message to them that will trigger something in their minds, what would that message be?
Well, I always say that, you know, what's in your hand is hard work. What's in your hand is honesty. What's in your hand is belief in God that I will work hard, I will study hard, I will give my best, and things will work out for me. Well, you succeed, you fail. That's not in your hand. But what is in your hand is to give in your best. Have faith. And after a few years, you will not regret that you didn't try, that you didn't give it your best. So always there is time set for everyone's life is different. Everyone's journey is different. You just need to have faith on yourself. You need to have faith that I will try my best and never lose hope. There is, world is beautiful. You have this life. Enjoy. Grades will come and go. Enjoy your hobbies. Make time for music. Make time for poetry. Sit and draw something or whatever you like doing. Because end of the day, when you've crossed 50, 60 years old, you will think, oh, I could have done so much. So never have that regret of I could have done so much. When you have the chance, you're young today, just do it.
So what do we say? Be a teacher. Rewards are great. Thank you very much for this enlightening conversation.
Thank you.